Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Oversharers podcast. My name is Colton.
And I'm Harbour.
And today we have a brand new episode featuring the wonderful Anissa.
Bow, 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 bow.
Yep. So Anissa, salam, tell us guys. A bit. Oh, alaikum assalam, darling. Anissa, tell us a bit about yourself.
A little bit about myself. That's so, it's giving CV. It's giving
you want it all.
Interview assessment center. A little bit about myself. So my name's Anissa. Thanks for having me on, by the way, guys. Oh. I basically create content designed to help Muslim women learn more about finance through the medium of pop culture. Yeah. So it's taking a tool you know that's very everyday, very much you'd see in your everyday life, and then using it to help you understand and build awareness of your financial rights and your financial choices through an Islamic financial lens.
Yeah. Mm. You're freeing the galleys.
That's
from
it.
The shackles of not knowing about their money, basically.
I think, ultimately speaking, the most interesting thing is that once they do know, they perform so much better in comparison to men. So, for example, once a woman knows how to invest and has the knowledge behind that, she performs 1.4% better than a man in terms of return on investment when it comes to investing in a portfolio.
Are you listening to that, girl?
Can we start with how do we
1.5 better? No, I'm sorry. This is a very important episode.
I get it, though. I get it. Can we just start with investment? How do the girlies, how can they start investing? I'm not going to lie. We did a post today. A lot of 18-year-olds were like, oh my God, we can't wait for this episode. We need to know what finance is all about. Sure. So how can a girl, let's say from 18 and above, start investing? What's like the basics? What's the 101?
The 101, I would say, well, I would say the really easy thing to do is to begin by reading around the topic. And that would mean your everyday life, reading things like the FT, reading the BBC News, reading CNN, and having like quite a wide range of an understanding of finance, and then getting a little bit more techie with it. So reading the likes of like Bloomberg as well, which might feel a little bit like there's a lot, it's slightly daunting.
Yeah.
But once you've kind of had the osmosis of knowledge that kind of comes through that, you start to pick up on those things, particularly at the age of 18, you're just knowing what's going on. So a good example I can give you right now in real time would be, I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with what's happening with like Sam Altman and OpenAI.
No. Okay. Oh, wait, did he leave?
So no, he got kicked off. Like,
and
he
then
literally,
someone
he was,
left with him.
So he was a CEO of OpenAI. So you and I would know it as sort of ChatGPT, right? Yeah. His board told him, do one. Yeah. And because he was being quote unquote too candid, that was quite literally, it's
so vague.
Too truthful.
No one really knows. There's a lot of tea going on Twitter. I'll let you guys read into that. But essentially, because of that, he got ousted. And then somebody else came in the interim period. Now, right now, it's like the ex-CEO of Twitch is now the interim CEO of OpenAI. Microsoft have offered Sam Altman a role. The whole team is literally like, well, if Sam's gone, now we're going.
Yeah,
like, it's literally like
director left.
Three seasons of Succession in like the space of 96 hours.
Oh my God.
Now, I say that all to say this, Microsoft is looking like a very nice investment right now. This is not me giving you investment advice, just FYI. I just need to, you know, have the
FCA
not on my back about it. Exactly. Make your own choices. Make wise choices, girls. But Microsoft is looking very nice right now as a result. Because once again, we don't know what's going to happen because it's literally like in real time changing every minute. Like you're watching it happen in real time over Twitter.
So it's like, but is it a thing where you've got to constantly keep checking these mediums like Financial Times or whatever just to see what changes are happening and then so making a decision to invest through that?
I give that as an example because that's what's happening in real time in the news and you can follow that and that can help inform the investment decisions you make, right?
Mm.
But if I was starting as an 18-year-old baby girl,
yeah,
I'd go with an ETF. And I'd literally look, and they are Sharia compliant ETFs as well. So they will most definitely comply with your Islamic beliefs. But what you'll find is that there are roughly, I would say, 4 to 5 very well performing ETFs. And an ETF essentially is an exchange traded fund. So what that means is they get the 10 most popular halal investments of various different companies, like let's say it's Apple, Tesla, etc. They put that in a little group, let's say, so it's like a little basket, and you invest in those shares of those said companies.
Oh.
So it's kind of like you're investing in a whole sort of basket without actually having to think about what's going on, how you're going to do this, etc. But as you sort of like, I guess, gather more knowledge and you're able to sort of use that, you can then sort of make more informative decisions on different types of investments as well. And obviously, it's not just about having shares, let's say, or like stocks.
Yeah.
A really good investment portfolio that works for you, you'll be investing in things like precious metals, stocks and shares, maybe potentially crypto. I'm not saying that should necessarily be your first choice, but that's something.
It's scary.
Property. And obviously, it really depends on your risk level, precisely.
Yeah.
And what you find is, I think traditionally speaking, people think that women, generally speaking, are very risk averse. I would say, from my understanding and study, literally academically and in real life, it's more a case of women don't know what they don't know. If I don't know how to invest,
valid. I agree with that.
How can I invest? And it's that sort of makes them reluctant to invest, because I need to have the information in order to make
an informed decision,
precisely. So I think all of this, I say all of this to say this, if I were starting all over again from the age of 18. There are many an app and none of them are paying me. So,
we're not mentioning that.
I'm not mentioning any of you, but no, I exist. But well, I say there are also Islamic compliant apps that one can use for sure.
Say it that way.
Similarly, there are mainstream apps that are available that are also really good, and you can find Islamic Sharia compliant ETFs on there as well.
Sorry, I just want to mention, just on the topic of Islamic or Islamic Sharia compliant, like, how does somebody or someone who's looking to invest, basically, like, where do they start in terms of Islamic financial literacy? Like, what can they do to, I don't know, I guess, expand their knowledge on it?
Great question. So it really depends on how you like to be taught as well, right? So not everybody wants to pick up a book, or not everybody wants to sit in like a 3-hour seminar being spoken at, etc. So I would say, in my experience, when I was starting out and I was learning about Islamic finance, it was very sort of academic based, because my background's in economics, and then I went and specialized in Middle Eastern economics and politics, and then I went and got qualified under Islamic finance under Chartered Institute. But there are many different ways. I would say there's a lot of material out there on YouTube. I say that with a disclaimer, because not all information is good information.
Mm-hmm.
I myself actually create courses that are targeted towards Muslim women. So I currently have 3 courses. One is Finesse Your Finances, which is like a 101 boot camp.
Love that.
You'll learn everything from budgeting to pensions to halal mortgages, etc. And then courses on things like investing more specifically. So invest in yourself, which is like a crash course. And then I've got something that's very much in depth as well. And then obviously talking to the girlies about money and marriage, which is like a really sort of prominent issue that the timeline loves to talk about. But when we get into like sort of the weeds of it and understanding your Islamic rights, both as a man and a woman, it sort of falls to the wayside. So those sorts of things are really important.
You mentioned budgeting, and I feel like for me, I felt like growing up, I didn't quite grasp the importance of budgeting until like I was 27.
Okay.
It was quite late. Like at the beginning, I used to just spend money.
Better late than never.
And then be like, oh my God, I've got nothing left. Now I'm struggling. And then I tried to do a spreadsheet, but then I still wasn't following what I needed to do. And then recently when I turned 27, 26, I think I discovered an app that like really helped me save money, also budget for different things, like create little pockets, which was more practical for me. And I think it resonates with what you said, where you were like, it's a way, like, it's the way that you learn about money. So, like, for me, I find it really tedious to just sit and just read about, like, you have to do this, this, and this. Like, I like practical things.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I think the way Islamic finance has historically been taught, it's very much like, well, for as a baseline, riba is haram. Okay,
yeah,
brilliant. I'm sure we all agree on that. That's great. But then beyond that, where do we go? And what does that look like? And I think, so my, I'm not sure if I even mentioned this at this point, but my background's in financial communications. So I've worked with the likes of JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, Dubai Financial Market, etc. Mm. And the biggest sort of misconception when it comes to literacy, for a start, if you're trying to sell a product or communicate that effectively, people need to have like a baseline understanding
yeah.
of what they're buying.
Yeah.
And so historically, savings products have always been targeted towards women. And that's why women tend to be really amazing savers.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to sort of, shall we say, more sophisticated products, like investment products,
yeah.
pensions, even insurance, that sort of thing.
Just anything
that's sort of like
risky.
Yeah, some level of risk associated to it. It's very much targeted towards men.
Yeah.
And as a result, there's this wide information gap between men and women. And that's where you start to see things like the pension gap, the gender pay gap, the investment gap. So I think there's just sort of like a whole plethora. But I think, yeah, the way you talk to people, it's really important. And I think that's why I found that I started creating this platform, was speaking to women and sort of going around the world and talking about what I do, because I don't feel like, at least as far as I know thus far, that there's enough content out there that's talking to women in a way that they feel heard,
yeah.
they feel accepted, they don't feel like they're being judged. It's very much an open door policy.
Do you think it's patriarchal?
What is?
So you know when you mentioned products that are centered on savings are targeted more towards women, and then things with some level of risk involved are targeted towards men. Do you think that targeting or that sort of pushing those kind of products to, do you think that's quite patriarchal?
I think historically, there's probably an underlying sense of a man's role is to be a breadwinner and a woman's role is to stay at home. And as a result, as a man, you're probably thinking, I need to think about all the various different ways I can create an income, more specifically passively as well, and I can just generate more income, because ultimately speaking, I don't personally believe we're living in a capitalist society. We are now beyond that. We're living in a neo-capitalist society, which means we live in an on-demand culture. I need things fast. I need to do things now, and it needs to happen. And that's why you get products that fit the mold of that particular lifestyle, let's say.
Mm.
So it, to some extent, it is patriarchal, and then it's just historic. It's sort of, it's what I've always done. So that's what I need to know. And that's why even when I do speak to Muslim women today, there's like a small proportion, I would say a small subset, that do think, I don't really need to know an awful lot because this sounds like my husband's business.
Yeah.
Mm.
But nothing is promised to anybody. And once again, like I have many a client, so I also financially coach, and I have many a client whereby they may be divorced, they may be widowed, they may not have married either, and they may be really successful in their career, but have a real lack of understanding and awareness of what to do with that money as well. There's definitely a whole subset of women that are of a particular age bracket where they're doing amazingly in their career, but have little awareness of what, where to pedal that in financially.
Yeah.
So I think
that's a really important point that you just made about women circumstances changing essentially. So the what you said about women being widowed or divorced and therefore like the man not being there anymore, therefore they're left to their own devices. How do they then access that information that was historically being peddled towards
completely
men?
Anecdotally, I remember I had a client whereby all the bills were under her husband's name, all of the sort of like the pensions, the investments, everything. And he had unfortunately passed away. And as a result, she was unable to like get access even into those accounts because she didn't know the password. She wasn't necessarily like a second person on those accounts either. And so like navigating a whole system as well, not to mention adding to the fact that if you're not legally married in, say, the UK, so you may have a nikah, but you don't have a legal registration here. that will add further complications when it comes to the finances of situations. So it's even more paperwork down the line. Now, I'm not saying that you can't get you can't get a legal, and that would allow for you to not be able to then gain access to said finance.
Yeah,
it's just making your life a lot harder. That's all it is. It depends how much you want to sort of, you know, get to a point where you can just sort of like not think about your finances as well. But like I said, it's paperwork either today or it's paperwork tomorrow. That's what I tend to tell people.
So what's like your advice on budgeting in a smart way? Like where can people start if you're talking about the example of women that you just gave now, including myself, guys, 3 years ago, where can we start? Like, we've got our salary now. Okay. What would the three main things that you would do with your money be after you've just received your salary?
Okay, perfect. Love that question. The first thing I would do is, for a start, do I have two separate accounts? Right? Okay. That's the first thing I would think about. Do I have a current account and do I have a savings account?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Do I have an emergency budget? And if I don't, am I putting a little bit of money towards that so that I can then build the life I want as well? So what I would do is I would immediately put those direct debits in. I'd be paying all the fixed costs, the bills that I need to. I'd be putting some money away towards my emergency fund. And then I would be sort of putting whatever the remainder is left in accordance to that, then be thinking about, okay, how much can I actually put away in terms of investments as well?
Mm-hmm.
So what, once again, it also depends on the lifestyle you're building towards as well, and what your goals are. And there are various different ways to budget as well. So for example, I like a zero-based budget, which means you tell me exactly what's in my account this month, and I will put all of my money to work so that there's zero in the end. There's zero left. So every pound you make should be working to some sort of goal, whether that be you're paying your groceries or you're paying towards your pension.
Mm-hmm.
So those are just sort of like off the top of my head things that I think that's really sound advice to think about if you're just sort of like starting out in your career, or even if you're not, if you're thinking about it now and you just want to create that life that you want.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, finance is just about really good organization.
Yeah.
You've got to be your own project manager, basically.
Yeah, sadly. You've got to be your own project manager outside of your 9-to-5.
Literally.
Oh, God, finance is just one of those topics, isn't it, where I just don't think we know enough. It's so niche. There's so many like niche bits of information that we could definitely, that could be useful to us, that we wouldn't even know where to start in terms of looking for it.
I think the biggest thing for me is, obviously, a lot of people in the UK, they've bought houses. Obviously, they've bought houses through mortgages. And then obviously there's a higher group of people that are like, we probably can buy houses. We probably do have the money, but we just don't want to do the riba aspect. So then obviously here comes Islamic banking and their idea of like buying a mortgage, which is a lot higher, obviously, because...
Especially because of Liz Truss, God bless her.
Trustonomics
has really done a number. Done a number on everyone,
so
really.
Like,
so how can the girls buy houses in a Sharia compliant way?
Is it worth getting
an Islamic mortgage?
Is it worth it to buy a house in this country or abroad? Like, is it harder to buy a house in like Dubai or Doha, for example? I think you have to
Okay, so the systems are like a little bit different depending on sort of where you're buying and what you're looking at. Once again, it really depends on what kind of lifestyle you're building towards, right? So for example, if you do choose to like buy here in the UK, there are many different avenues you can go down. So there is obviously a Sharia compliant way, and there are many banks out there that also offer Sharia compliant mortgages. Is it more expensive? Yes. Are the repayments more expensive? Also yes. But that's also, once it kind of trickles down into what you philosophically and ethically believe. Mm-hmm. And I say those specific words rather than Islamically, because there are sheikh that would say, for example, an Islamic mortgage is the only way you can sort of go around the idea of getting a house.
Yeah.
There are others who feel that because of the way in which they as a system have decided to work, create this system, it's not all entirely halal. So it really depends on your madhab, who you go with, what you're buying, who you're buying from, what your mortgage, like there's so many different factors to think about. Mm-hmm. If you then compare that to buying abroad, let's say, and you were investing in, I don't know, like let's say the Dubai or Doha, as you mentioned, the system is a little bit different because they will, you can buy in accordance to an Islamic mortgage, but they have different styles of mortgages as well there. Right. And because their products are a little bit more sophisticated than they would be here, because they're an Islamic country, a Muslim country. So it looks a little bit different as well. It also—
is it pricier? Very much,
is it pricier? It depends. Once again, same thing. Mm. Where are you buying? Exactly. If I bought a house, if I bought a house in London versus buying a house in, I don't know, Dudley.
Sharjah.
I don't know. That's so random. That was in my head too. So random.
I just— although Sharjah's very much up and coming. People really, it's very much like a family kind of city. Yeah. So, and it's like 20 minutes away from Dubai.
Nice.
So people are, and the food's great. But other than that, I could go on all day.
Like, it's a good place.
It's a good place. Yeah. So yeah, like as I was saying, so it really depends where you're buying, what you're doing. So I know that, for example, there's a whole host of people who tend to buy in like student towns, for example.
Right, okay.
Buy like a dingy sort of like three bed, do it up.
Yeah.
And then get a few, couple of students in there, get a few students and get cracking.
Oh, I've heard about this.
People— is that in that. The UAE, you mean? Or just—
No.
In
the UK.
So like universities.
Yeah. So some— exactly. But if you're looking to—
like, they can make good money from that, though. Yeah. I understand
that as an investment opportunity, certainly. It takes a lot of work. Mm. I don't think being a landlord or a landlady is for the faint-hearted.
For students. No. Especially. For students after this, after a Friday night.
It is not it. But at the same time, yeah, like I said, so that's just one way. But if you're thinking about buying a house yourself, before you start that whole cycle, you need to decide for yourself what avenue you want to go down.
Yeah.
I remember, and once again, another anecdote. I had one of my mentors tell me, so he was doing his dissertation on mortgages more specifically, and Islamic mortgages. Now I think about it, that is— it's quite a something to do a dissertation on mortgages. I don't know how long you can write about that for, but he did. Anyways, suffice to say, he consulted a sheikh about things, who told him that if you are buying a house in a non-Muslim country, you could buy the first house under the principles of whatever said land is, etc. And I think that's what he ended up going down. So he ended up buying his house using— and I guess this is like 20, 25 years ago, where Islamic products were sort of nowhere to be seen.
Yeah.
Or HSBC Amana was just about coming out at that point. So, yeah, like he bought his house or whatever it was under whatever, you know, the constrictions were at that time. But once again, because we've sort of developed our Islamic financial understanding since there, I'm not entirely sure whether that would still hold. But once again, you will find sheikhs across the world that argue about this tooth and nail, about whether it is halal to take a mortgage or not.
So there's like various differences in their opinions.
There's various differences, but I mention all of these on my course, so...
If I go the course, guys.
So I just want to quickly bring it back to— I know you mentioned you do— your course has, you know, a segment on what women's rights are in terms of, like, in a marital home, their fight financial rights. So I just wanted to ask you a bit about that. So what would you say to kind of married women who are listening to us who want to understand what their financial rights are in their homes and between their spouses?
Get your money, girl.
Get your money for sure. But what I'm about to say may break hearts across the land. And I'm so sorry.
If it's the truth, then it has to be said.
So you know how the timeline loves
Mahar.
We'll get into that one. But the first one was, what's mine is mine and what's his is mine.
Yeah.
Right? That is literally— that encapsulates Muslim to another level.
Mm-hmm.
This is true. However,
however,
it's not entirely the truth, because that man, your husband, may have other financial obligations, mm-hmm. which may include, for example, his parents. It may include younger female siblings, for example, or relatives. Mm-hmm. It may be a case where he has other sort of another financial situation that he needs to take care of. So all of his money isn't necessarily entirely yours. He needs to be able to take care of those various different facets of his life. But yeah, if by and large, it is your right as a Muslim woman to be clothed, to be fed, to have a roof over your head, etc. Now, the line also comes under what he's able to afford. You could be marrying a sheikh, and if he's giving you like a two-bed in, I don't know, East Ham, you probably know there's something dodgy going on there. Do you know what I mean? Because he could probably be giving you more. Mm-hmm. But if this man was just like, you know, breaking his back to be able to give you the best possible life that he possibly could, then that is within that sort of limitation and such. So I do think actually this is a great question, because I would say of all of the financial choices you ever make in your life, I would say the most important would be who you choose to marry.
Can we just sit on that for a second?
Who you choose to marry is the biggest financial decision you're ever going to make.
And isn't that so crazy? Because often when we, let's say, from the ages of 20 to 30, and I'm not saying all women are fickle before you all come for me, but a lot of our emotions are based on emotion. It's never about, like, what he earns, or like, I get it, we probably nowadays talk about it,
but women are also,
but if you're in love, you don't are really not ask thinking those questions.
If you're getting lost in the sauce,
yeah,
like,
ladies,
you're not asking that.
And call
like
it
Allah
a day.
Will provide for us.
I would say, look, it's not necessarily, I say that to say this, it's not that it's the biggest financial decision because you're just going to be freeloading off him for the rest of your life. It's the biggest decision because any financial decision you make together, it is a partnership at the end of the day. So if you're choosing to buy a house together, who are you going to get a mortgage with? Are you even going to get a mortgage? Are you going to be renting? Are you going to be making, do you have an investment account? Is it joint? Do you have a joint account? Do you have separate accounts? These are all things you need to think about. So I'm not saying it's the biggest financial decision you need to make because, i.e. you need to marry an extremely rich and wealthy man. That lifestyle isn't necessarily for everybody because it comes with a lot in itself.
Just for the women out there in talking stages with men who are thinking about getting married, what sort of questions they need to be asking about their financial situation?
Take notes, girls.
Okay, well, I would, more specifically when it comes to the finances, I would start with, what does your average monthly spend look like? Where are you spending your money? Because the other thing is, where somebody, anybody, chooses to spend their money does say quite a lot about them, mm-hmm. right? So if it's just a case where most of his money is going to TFL, it is what it is, because TFL is hella expensive these days. But if it's a case where he's just sort of like buying, I don't know, PlayStation games every other week.
Or trainers.
We're going to have this discussion because you need to decide what financial responsibility looks like to you, both of you. So I would say looking at the way he spends, looking at what he's spending on, if he's spending on sadaqah, for example, and purifying his money, that's a great tenancy or like sort of foundation of understanding of not just responsibility, but an Islamic foundation to finance and what that looks like. The tenets of Islamic finance are, you want the wealth gap to narrow. It's about creating and sort of stabilizing a society in said way. Yeah. And sadaqah is a way of doing that.
And sadaqah is a really powerful tool because whoever gives sadaqah is never without money. So
it increases your wealth.
And it's like you will never ever feel the burden of feeling like where's my money coming from? What is happening? Do you know what I mean?
Money always comes when you get, when and you it's give also, sadaqah. That's what I've noticed.
And it's like manifestation. Like when you think about, in a halal, gentrified halal way, what I mean by like, is
we're talking
always,
about Dua, guys.
Yeah, Dua, like that's what I'm saying. Gentrified Dua. But like when you think about money in a positive light, honestly, it will come to you. Like I remember, and I talk about this one all the time. There was a time when we were at uni, and I think I used to get like £300 for my bursary, and I lived a good life.
A good life.
I had money all the time. I was going
rich
shopping.
At uni.
And I didn't even get I didn't even get uni tuitions or like any of that. That 300 sufficed me, and it's so crazy because sometimes, like, you get in places in life where you feel like your money just feels like it's constraining you, and yeah. like you feel trapped by it. And another thing I wanted to talk about was debt. Credit cards, people getting in debt.
But what was I going to say? You know, when you said money feeling like it's constricting you, there's also when you have money insecurity. I feel like you have a lot of money insecurity yeah. when you're not giving money away.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I feel like it's that age-old mo money, mo problems at yeah. the end of the day. Like,
chase it.
I think ultimately, once again, the vast majority of society are victims of the system we live in because the economic system and such is built such that when, you know, you go to school, you learn, you go and get your degree, you go into whatever grad scheme or whatever job it is, you make that said money to then go off and do X, Y, Z with it. And it goes into so many different facets of your life such that you're not really being conscious of what's coming in and what's going out.
Yeah.
And
why don't they teach that in schools?
There's so many things that would be useful that they could teach in schools, but it just is what it is. I think things are changing though. I think the younger generations now do definitely have more access and understanding to finance, and the democratization of finance has occurred largely because of financial technology, mm. because of charities out there that are helping mm-hmm. To help kids understand a little bit more about beyond sort of budgeting and such, but also making it more age appropriate. So I went into a school, an all-girls school in inner city London. It was like a year nine class, and we were talking about moving out and how to finance your life and what does that look like, etc.
Was that like a PSHE lesson?
It was like a PSHE lesson, literally. It was
we
like
talked
a
about sex. That's yeah. all we ever talked about in our class.
I think that's
so sad.
That's more than probably most state schools, to be fair. I don't even remember my PSHE lesson.
It was like drugs.
But it was drugs.
Yeah.
Don't do drugs.
Call Frank.
Yeah. Literally, don't do drugs, kids. It was literally like that scene out of Mean Girls.
Literally,
when the gym teacher comes in. Literally. But yeah, talking to the girls, it was so interesting because, and this is what I mean, like, you know, there was a whole subset of like young girls I was talking to, it was like, who were basically saying things like, for a start, it was a bit jarring to be called Miss, but we'll park that. Miss, I don't understand why I need to think about this because my husband's going to do this, 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 and this. And trying to sit and talk to 14-year-old girls and, you know, their hopes and ambitions and dreams, it is, to some extent, quite crushing to know that, like, from the jump, they already feel like, I don't need to know it about any of this. Mm. And you're going to put yourself in such a position that ultimately...
disadvantage.
Ultimately, you'll be disadvantaged. And yeah. it's not to, once again, I think, I really doubt that acts are listening to this podcast, but if you are, hey. it's not to say that you should remove the role of a man or Muslim man and his duties and his obligations, etc. But ultimately, education is granted to everyone. And there's a reason why, you know, Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam was the first word that was uttered was ikra, the yeah. ability to read. Right. We should all be sort of pursuing excellence and having that sort mm-hmm. of idea of tarbiyah as well, with regards to just having the akhlaq and the ihsan to just go forward with something and mm-hmm. really educate ourselves. Like mm-hmm. having also, once again, in this discourse, because I know this discourse is so triggering for a lot of people in so many different ways, but how you speak to both men and women about finance largely differs because of that access in the first place. So democratizing that is really important. But yeah, back to the girls, when I did speak to them about it and we had the whole situation where I think they realized, A, how expensive life is. So that was a reality check, which was really good. And then it just got them thinking. But I remember there was this one girl she had recently come from Afghanistan, and she had like really big dreams about what she wanted to do. And it was really inspiring. Yeah. Like she was just like, you know, miss, I want to go to uni and I want to study economics and I want to be an entrepreneur and I want to do this and this is, and you know, I want to go back to Afghanistan one day and I want to da 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 da. And like, it was really inspiring. And I think that's sort of like the gap is also when you've gone through so much hardship in life and seen so many things, the idea of adversity looks really different. Yeah, and the idea of climbing over those obstacles also is very different.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, like I said, it's,
I love that.
Yeah, yeah, I love it. It was very inspiring, I have to say. The kids gave me much more than I gave them, for sure.
That was nice.
Yeah.
So nice.
But I'm glad that they are like bringing you into schools and like having these workshops with young women, young girls.
Young girls, listen. It was exactly like I was back in high school. It was literally.
We didn't have that luxury in high school.
Yeah, bar the lesson, they were just as crazy as like I would have been back in the day. Or the girl, they remind me so much of girls I would have been in school with.
No way.
I feel,
oh my God,
like,
miss.
Yeah, literally. And it's like, I remember there was this one girl who was showing me pictures of this guy, some famous guy. I feel like he was on Empire from like that show from back in the day. Anyways, I say that, she's like, yeah, he's my man. And I was like, I'm going to go with this, but we're going to get back to the case study now.
Let's bring it back.
Let's go back to cost of living.
Yeah, quite literally.
Okay, can we talk about before we forget?
Okay.
I know a lot of the girlies on here, but I've got certain debts right now that I need to pay off. Do you know what I mean? Well, they're not actual debts. No, because it comes in like waves of three.
Yeah.
So you pay the first one off once you purchase, and then the second one.
I don't
want to
break it.
Oh my
you.
God, Anissa, what am I doing? What am I doing? Because I've got about 19 quid left to pay off.
Okay, alhamdulillah. It's 19 quid. After this ends, please.
Oh, don't do it again.
Just
delete the app.
Yeah. Okay. So there's this, should I start?
Just start. Yeah, just break us.
The massive misconception is, for one, that it's not a debt. It's definitely a debt. And I'll explain why. Even though you're splitting that payment in three.
It goes on your credit score as
it
well.
It goes on your credit score. They're not regulated by the FCA. That's a big, big, big one.
God.
And I say that as somebody who mentioned crypto earlier, because crypto also, to some degree, isn't legislated for or is not sort of reprimanded by the FCA in the same way, but what they work in very different ways. But itself, right, when you decide to split, let's say you did an ASOS buy, you spent £300, it's £100 a month, right? It's a case of, okay, you can pay that £100 off and it's all well and good, but before paying that off, it's still a debt. So if you couldn't pay that off, right, like God forbid, but if you couldn't pay it off, they legally have the right to basically essentially act like bailiffs and take you to court if you could not.
Oh my God.
Now, this is my major bugbear. I mean, that's me putting it politely.
Taken to a court for an ASOS coat.
That's
it will be wild.
It's
wild.
So living.
But they have so much time.
Yeah. I mean, the way they work as financial products as well, this is just essentially another revenue stream for them. Not necessarily their biggest way of making revenue, but it certainly is a revenue stream. The main point to have, though, is that I mentioned earlier that Islamically speaking, the idea of narrowing the wealth gap is essentially the sort of bread and butter on which we stand. And it's the idea of making sure you advocate for those that are less wealthy. That's why we give zakat. Mm. That's why we think about sadqa. That is why, you know, doing good looks very different in so many different ways, whether it's giving money, giving time, etc.
Yeah.
The whole point is to narrow that gap. Products like BNPL products do not allow for that, because essentially what it does is it feeds and festers on that on-demand culture of, I need to have it tomorrow. If I don't have it tomorrow, then how am I going to live? What's going on? And by feeding off of that, you're going to be continuously in a cycle of, I need this, I want this. And it's almost like being on a roller coaster that you can never get off. You're on a cycle, essentially.
You know where that trap comes from as well? TikTok shop is a trap.
The kids told me about that.
It is an actual trap.
Yeah.
Anissa, shall I make you laugh? Just before I came into the studio today, I was going to get a £120 pair of boots on And now I'm rethinking it.
Okay, so I haven't finished. So that is the essence of why it's bad, etc. But when we think about it and come down to the stats of it, 2 in 5 people in the UK use to pay for everyday goods, their groceries.
Oh no, that can't be good.
They use for food.
No,
isn't
no,
scary?
Lord.
Yeah.
Because the way I use is very different. It's just on items of clothing.
Yeah, and I think that disconnect, and like I said, you're not alone. There are so many people who feel like is just a way for them to essentially pay off a little bit and free up some money that they can spend elsewhere, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And it's marketed really well. Yeah. All the NPL products are marketed exceptionally well. But in the end, what it's really about is the idea that by delaying your payment as well, it acts as a debt. That debt needs to be paid off. And it's just another way in which they can continue those revenue streams, continue those partnerships with those particular companies, all the while, whilst you have that level of disassociation of what you're doing, it's helping promote those products and their use. So even though it might not necessarily affect you, you can just carry on paying your debt, etc. There will be people who cannot, but because of the success of that product, it will still thrive. It will still do really well.
Wow. So it's like the buy now, pay later, basically, which is...
Do you remember back in the day, there was Wonga? Yeah. And there was
Oh my God, that place that you had to go to get money. Was that Wonga?
No, they were just like payday loans.
Yeah, that so, really
scared me. I just
missed
the last bit of what you said. So basically, there are people out there who are able to pay those payments on time, but then there's some that aren't able to. Just basically make their money from people who aren't able to pay the debt.
I cannot confirm nor deny that.
Because that's
legally.
Sad. That's actually
but
sad.
I would say you got to think about how and which ways these certain products are used and how they generate income. By and large, for sure, if you're on a B2B basis, a business-to-business basis, and you're partnering with organizations that, and they're allowing for your product to be embedded onto their systems, etc., and people are choosing to use them, there will be some sort of, you know, financial goings on between those
like
said businesses.
Yeah.
I.e., what I'm saying is, those partnerships will be financially advantageous to both parties or more. But when we're looking at it from a business-to-consumer relationship, i.e., if I decide to use a buy now, pay later product, and I can't actually pay this off on that said date, it's going to cause many issues. Mm. Me.
It's basically, in some way, they pray. They don't pray, but in some way...
No, they do.
The people...
No, they do.
In some
She's
way...
Like, I'm not even going to...
They prey on people who can't afford
that. I'll stand 10 toes down on this. I'll die on this hill.
But they essentially prey on people who can't afford certain luxuries to use their app. And then if they can't pay it back, the person's basically stuck in debt and it's a cycle.
You don't even need to necessarily be the most vulnerable as well. There's Gen Z and their sort of lust for life when it comes to luxury goods or any kinds of goods for that matter.
Yeah.
Once again, they really are born into an consumerism and an on-demand culture. And it, once again, it's a sort of like negative feedback loop. Where the more I do, the more I'm stuck in this. The more I'm stuck in this.
Yeah.
So it's a case. There was a statistic very recently out which was saying something like 76% of Gen Z or those that were surveyed find themselves in debt to BNPL products because
70%.
76.
That's a
big 3 in 4.
So much of Gen Z.
Gen Z, and it's. Once again, it's not even necessarily their fault. They just marketed exceptionally well. It's not perceived as a debt.
Yeah.
There's a massive disassociation of what debt looks like. And it's also reinforced by an on-demand culture whereby...
Everyone has this money to have it.
If I want... Yeah, exactly. If I can get my Amazon Prime tomorrow, why wouldn't I?
They never use like the language of debt to market Klarna as well. So that's why you don't necessarily think it's a debt. You just think, oh, this is making my life easier.
Yeah. I mean, it's very... Not similar. I'm going to go off in a tangent now. But with credit scores as well, when you do your credit scores and it tells you it's good, it's very good, da-da-da-da-da, that language is used to sort of help you understand, sort of make you feel a little bit better about things. So it could say something like, oh, you needs a little bit of improvement, etc. Back office is just like red alert, red alert, red alert.
Oh, wait,
do you know what I mean?
Oh, means red alert.
Like, no, this is absolute absolutely shite. And we're like, oh, you know, we're in the amber.
Language is really, really important. And that's why sort of my background in comms and having studied these, products, but I have to learn what they are and what they've done, how they're used, etc. And working with said clients, I've sort of used that knowledge and that level of communications to essentially transfer that to help Muslim women understand more about finance, ultimately speaking.
That's crazy. I'm just thinking about my credit score right now.
Oh. And also,
it was actually a good last month.
The thing is, another thing that credit card companies do is when they see like a slight, when there's like a slight improvement in your credit score, they'll offer you like a higher limit on your credit card.
Oh, yeah.
And me, I get very tempted by those things. And sometimes it's as simple as a text message. Just Y or N? Like, do you want the extra money?
That nudge intervention is so smart. Behavioral economics is embedded so well in the vast majority of fintech.
Like, I think there's psychology involved in it.
Yeah, exactly. Behavioral economics is the merger of economics and psychology. So it will essentially give you prompts that will help feed your brain in understanding things in a really simple way, but it will navigate you to the desired goal. Precisely. Yeah. But I would say, you know, when it comes to credit limits and things like that, once again, different sheikhs, different schools of thought. And this is why, actually, I remember having this discussion about credit cards versus BNPL.
What's BNPL?
Buy now, pay later.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. I'm trying to be more umbrella term so I don't start cussing out particular BNPLs. So the main difference between BNPL and buy now, pay later and credit cards is that when we look at credit cards as a tool for navigating finance, they're quite helpful for a lot of people in the sense that garnering really good credit, not missing payments, but you're being able to essentially use a credit card if you can use it successfully as if it's a debit card and pay it off well, etc., sort of helps you open up a whole wealth stream in the sense that I'm not even talking about having a higher limit. I'm talking about the kinds of financial products that are offered to you as well. So the different types of investment products. But then also building credit allows you to go on to buy a house and do other larger things, essentially. Mm. A buy now, pay later product isn't going to do that for you.
No. All isn't it on the benefit?
It's feeding immediate gratification.
God. Whereas the credit card is a bit more meritocratic.
You're getting some benefits.
Yeah, but once again, there's like different schools of thought on this as well, because you will find sheikhs that are like, stay away from it. It's essentially awful and works in a similar fashion. And there'll be some that feel like, well, you can use this product so long as you're using it in this specific way and you're able, you know, you're very financially responsible in order to help you deliver goals. But once again, each their own. Really depends on which school of thought you follow.
Right, so today's Monday Madness. Financial advice you would have told yourself when you were younger. Don't blow the student loans.
Don't do it, girl. That's literally all I'm hearing in my head. It's just going, don't do it. Oh my God, I did it. That's literally the anthem of any student.
When you were talking about credit cards, that's the meme that was in my head. Like, don't do it, girl, don't do it.
Don't let anyone use your name on credit. Set up.
You know, all them girls that got booked by their boyfriends to get them cars. Let's not do that, girls.
Oh, my God. Ooh. Yeah,
if
girls.
This is you, please get in touch.
Oh, my God, yeah. So, like, you'd find, like, some women might, like, buy cars on finance for their boyfriends. Or lease them.
This has nothing to do with anything. However, there is also... this is from my yesteryear working policy. But there are many Muslim women in prison. And the reason that there's a certain subset of women that are in prison. And as a result, they've ended up in prison because of sort of taking it upon themselves to just being sent down on behalf of their man.
Oh, no.
For various different things. Yeah. What? And then.
So
he did it. And he's like.
And she took the rap.
I would never. Wallahi. I love my life too much. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Oh no, I feel sorry for them.
Six months, would you do it?
No,
absolutely not.
Three months.
No! Why are you looking at me like that?
I'm asking both of you.
I mean,
would you take the rap for him with 3 months?
Would I take the rap?
He's the best husband in the world.
Love of your life.
Love of my life, best husband. How are we in this situation? How are we in this situation in the first place that I'm now having to take the rap, bro? What? What do you mean?
Because your car was under your name.
Yeah, your car's under your name.
It's a good thing I'm a passenger princess, honestly.
Oh. All right, next one.
Someone said lifetime ISA.
Was that it?
Yeah,
oh, I don't know.
Just lifetime ISA.
So question.
Okay. Is that halal?
So is there financial literacy advice you would have told yourself when you were younger? Someone just said lifetime ISA.
Lifetime now. ISA's not bad. It's basically free money.
Is that halal degree. Though?
Yeah, because essentially it would Islamically be seen as a gift.
Oh,
a gift. Because you're putting your money into this lifetime ISA. There's an upper quartile limit to that and how much you can invest. So in twofold, you're basically allowed to take that money out if you're buying your first property.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And there's also stipulations on that. So how much you choose to invest in that and whether you're buying in London or not out of London, you usually have a bigger bracket if you're buying in London because houses are a lot more expensive. Or if you're not doing that, you can take it out upon retirement, or more specifically when you reach pension age as well. So it is roughly about $4,000 in total that the government will give you, depending on if you like basically succeed to investing at however much. But you're not making, there's no interest associated with that, and there are definitely halal options
That's
available.
A good option.
There you go.
What about premium bonds?
Nope.
Absolutely haram.
How long you got? In essence, if you wanted to invest in a bond, Islamically speaking, you would invest in sort of like the Islamic equivalent, which is called a sukuk, and that's an Islamic bond. And that's because bonds in themselves, because of the way that they it's used as a financial instrument, there's debt incurred in that.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't, it's basically, once again, it's not part of like the system in which we follow, Islamically speaking. But you can invest in bonds, and they're not as in Islamic bonds, sukuk, let me be very specific with that. And they're actually a really great tool if you're somebody who's quite financially risk averse. So it's a nice like sort of jump into it if you want.
Oh.
And they are available on certain stock markets that are in Muslim countries.
Nice.
Like the UAE.
Nice.
Or and Saudi.
Ooh.
Oh.
Work when you were young and save money. Do things that make you happy. Travel more.
Work, save money, travel. But if you're traveling, you're spending money.
Yeah.
I would actually say, once again, build for the life you want and what that looks like. So when I was younger, I make myself sound really old. I wasn't that old. When I was younger, I traveled quite a bit. So I used to have this sort of idea that I will travel to one country in Europe and one country out of Europe every year.
Oh, I like that.
And I would just like travel around. And I learned so much. It was probably one of the fastest like learning development education that I ever had. But once again, that was building for the life that I wanted, because I was happy to invest in traveling versus like some of my friends were very happy to invest in various other different things, like whether that be a car, whether that be, you know, going out and having different experiences in real time, like going to really nice restaurants, having really nice clothes, really nice bags, etc. So it's just one. Yeah, exactly.
It's a different lifestyle for all.
Different strokes for different folks.
Mm. Don't get into credit card debt.
In a word, yeah.
Mm.
Don't do it. Don't do it, girl.
Stop thinking about what your money can buy. Start thinking about what your money can earn.
What your money can earn. I mean,
it's investments.
Yeah, like passive income streams. For example, at the top of our chat, we were talking about budgeting, and I think that's a really useful tool. But I think if we're being realistic as well in a current sort of cost of living crisis, there's only so much we can also budget as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like budgeting to death isn't going to necessarily solve the issue, but it's a really good start if you're somebody who's very financially unconscious, I would say. So if you don't know where your money is going or what you're doing, and you're just continuously tapping your card at for every latte, for every sort of like, you know, place going for sushi, whatever it may be, you need to have like a very honest conversation with yourself about finances. So that's why I do also promote the idea of having like a financial date once a month, whether it's, you know, you on your own, or whether it's you and your husband or partner, whoever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
Being very financially honest is very, very crucial, very honest. Well, I would also say, like I said, really take that idea of talking about finances before you get married very seriously.
If someone said to you they were in 30k debt but they wanted to marry you, how would you look into that?
That's a good one. I like that. How did you get into debt? Are you in student debt? If it's student debt,
credit card debt.
Hun.
30k.
That means at least it's a bit of a mad one.
What were you doing?
It's just an example.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's in my headspace.
But that's things that they need to think about.
Yeah, 110%. Like I said, you need to think about the life you want and build towards that. Yeah. Because there will be many an obstacle in your pathway when you get married and the decisions you make and what you choose to do. So yeah, don't take those conversations lightly. Come and be on job when it comes to, you know, thinking about these things.
We've got Don't Walk Into Topshop.
Is that still here? I swear ASOS bought them out.
ASOS bought them out. Is it a need? No, save your money. And then we go, you don't need it, don't buy it, save your money and buy a house.
Okay. Wait.
Okay.
Not every day save and buy for a house, okay? And I say this because...
Sometimes I just want a nice bag.
Sometimes exactly. A designer bag.
I just want myself the non-boycotted brands. I just want a nice bag.
I say that because even Islamically speaking, having nice things or having a nice life isn't sort of something where you're going to be slapped on the wrist for it. Having a nice lifestyle is also really important in terms of just being able to feel good about yourself and live the life you want and whatever that looks like. Of course, if your only MO in life is I want to own a house, then there are, once again, are certain goals that are geared towards that. But there are points where you need to like stop and smell the flowers as well. So enjoy your money. That's a big thing I always tell women. Enjoy your money. It's interestingly, it's a case of, at least as far as I'm concerned with clients, where there's loads of women who do up enjoyment, love that, love their lives, etc., but then are either in debt, don't know a lot about finance, need to improve that in some way. Or there are women who have money and don't know what to do with it and aren't enjoying it. Either way, no one's really enjoying their
life. It's like two extremes though.
You've got to
be the lady in the middle.
Moderation.
So this is the hikmah, right? Islamically speaking, whereby the middle ground, the proportionate ground is where we're supposed to be. For example, our body has a right over us. There are people in our lives that have a right over us. There are different things. And so it's the idea of balance has always been very much a part of our deen. So those are certain things I think about, and finance is very much a part of that. So it's the idea of, you know, purifying your money is a really important tool. So giving zakat, sadqah, etc. is a really good tool in order to break that relationship whereby, you know, money is your world, it's your illah, it's your essentially like the only thing you're working towards is money, the only thing you need is money. And in the end, 9 times out of 10 when you talk to like really big CEOs, etc., they get to that point and they're like, now what? I did all of this for what? What was the benefit in doing that? So it's really important to enjoy life as much as you're gearing towards those goals.
Damn.
I think it's true though, because I feel like a lot of us, when we're trapped in the rat race of the 9 to 5, let's say I've got children, so my responsibilities increase. I'm paying for like swimming and football and Quran class. You're already feeling like, oh my God, where is this going to come from if you're still on the same salary as when you were like 21? So I also think thinking about like ways to grow in yourself, growing your money, whether that's through zakah, but also growing your money through like knowledge and doing different things. I think those are a lot of things that women need to think about. And I feel like in my 20s, I was all about enjoyment, I won't lie. I just got married. I was like, yeah, it's going to be my husband. And I'm going to go on my holidays. And then I had kids.
Yeah, you're not alone though.
Yeah, I had kids and I was like, no. Like, I've got to wake up. Like, you've got to provide for them as well. And like, so I think there's so many different things that come to it. But I do agree, balance. You can't just be like stingy and strict with your own money. Because then what are you going to do? You're not going to be happy.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's happy. One of my best friends, before she got married, one of the top three things her mum said was, make sure you don't marry a stingy man. That will be, that'll be like literally the worst thing you do in life.
Gosh.
So,
very upset. Girls, I'd be happy.
Yeah. But by stingy, it does not necessarily mean he needs to be the sheikh of XYZ. It just means, is he able to give you
But it's nice to have someone that has an open hand.
Stinginess is going to be subjective when you think about it, because he's going to be thinking, I'm not stingy because I'm still giving you everything that you need. Maybe I'm not giving you things that he deems as luxuries. Do you know what I mean?
It is definitely subjective, but I think stingy in the sense that...
But if he's if he could,
it's more of a case of if he could, but he doesn't.
Yeah. Okay,
do you know what I mean?
Open
that purse.
Do you know what I mean? That's how you make people happy. You want to live. You don't. I personally would not like to feel in a very awkward conversation with my husband.
I don't want to feel uncomfortable talking about
money. Open that crypto
money.
Wallet, bro. Listen.
You don't want to be. You don't want to be uncomfortable asking for like the bare minimum. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean.
But I think what comes into it is what you said: having financial dates and.
Yeah. Have a nice little matcha.
Chat, get the spreadsheet
get
out.
Get the spreadsheet out, honestly. And literally build towards a life you want, ultimately.
Oh, someone said to buy plots of land. Oh, sorry, Heather, were you going to say something?
No, go.
Plots of land?
Yeah, to buy plots of land with my then income.
My then income?
So damn, she doesn't have the income. Smart.
Oh, okay.
She's thinking ahead. So in our country, a lot of people buy plots of land that appreciate through time, so more money,
And then they go on to sell
it. People do the same in South Asia. So my background, I'm South Asian, right? I'm Kashmiri. So people do that there as well. But I think that's an interesting one. If you have the intention, I guess,
of living there,
of maybe doing it up, selling it on, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, you know, to each their own.
Do we have time for a scenario?
I think so.
I came here for the scenario.
Wait, I got a really cute one. Wait, I got a cute one that I got someone text me on TikTok today. So basically she goes, "Hey girls, I love you guys. I've been following you guys for a while and I must say I'm proud." Oh, thank you. Love you too.
Thank you, girl.
She goes, "I've got a bit of a dilemma. So there's this guy that I've been speaking to for a little over 11 months. We get on really well and he's like my best friend. Both of our intentions was to get married." She goes, "Your girl's been trying." Like, the connection's there. She goes, However, there was something I didn't know about until I found out recently. I thought he was working for the whole time. However, he's actually a full-time carer for his mum.
Oh, bless him.
She goes, "That's where the genuine connection came from, because we could relate on so many things with regards to family and life in general." She goes, "He says he wants to get married and originally told me by January 2024 we'll be married, but he's now said he's broke and has asked me to wait longer, but hasn't given me a time frame." She goes, "So what did I do? I told him I'd wait and then I blocked him. I've had my time wasted before."
That might be smart.
She goes, "I've had my time wasted before and I don't want to have to wait for someone. Have I done the right thing?"
Calate is the smart.
This is real, isn't it?
Like, yeah, this is a real scenario.
We have to be serious.
Okay.
Right. Serious, come on.
Okay.
So she's interested. She's, they've known each other. These are the facts. 11 months.
The little over 11 months made me laugh because, babes, it could have been a year. And could have just a little over.
Okay, I like it was roughly a year.
Yeah, roughly a year. They've been speaking. She thought he was been working the whole time. He's actually a carer for his mum. That's very sweet. So like a very, very noble thing for sure. Yeah. Once again, I think it goes back down to building the life you want. Do you see a future with this person? Mm-hmm. And what does that look like for you? If he's not working currently, that doesn't necessarily mean he's never going to be working. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Does he have drive? Does he have ambition? What's his skill set like? Mm. You know, and thinking about it from that sort of perspective. But the eye blocking him, not gonna lie, that might be smart in the sense that if you're like,
so she says she's gonna thinking
wait. Very, she's thinking very pragmatically. She's very clinical. I think she sounds like a smart cookie.
And I feel like she's probably been through this before.
Yeah, she's said that
though.
But I think if it's a case whereby, once again, you need to decide if this is your person, ultimately speaking. Like I said, this is gonna be one of, if not the most important decisions you ever make in life, because it's a precursor to the life you want, ultimately speaking.
If you're going to be, and we have to say, a lot of marriages fail because of financial difficulties.
Top three reasons.
I don't know.
42% of marriages in the UK end in divorce.
Because of financial reasons?
Nah, just because.
42% is so high.
It's actually apparently, and I don't have the data to back this, I wouldn't put this on here, but apparently it's actually higher in Islamic.
Recently I heard a TikTok that said 76%.
That's what I heard.
Yeah. I saw the same TikTok. I think we referenced it in our previous episode.
Yeah.
So but I mean, that might be in the... But that was in the US. But I can understand that because a lot of people get divorced very quickly.
I think people get married very early. Yeah. And who you are at like 22 isn't necessarily the same person you're going to be at 30. No. Exactly. So those are sort of things that one would need to think about, etc. It's not to say that it can't happen. It certainly does happen. But once again, it depends. May the odds ever be in your favor.
Inshallah.
But I think the one thing that I've gathered from this conversation is build the life that you want. And I feel like financially,
something that keeps coming up.
Do you know what I mean? Financially, but also with the love of your life and whoever you're going to choose, you need to really think about what life do I want? How does it look like? And can we build this together?
Yeah. Is he flexible enough to basically, is he someone that you can have those conversations with?
Well,
that is
that's a red flag then, if you can't have those conversations.
Well, yeah, because there's a lot of people that that feel like they can't, because they just have this understanding that, okay, the man's the provider, the maintainer, therefore that's his department. And therefore I don't need to look into this.
Mm. Once again, that may be the case where if he's a provider, that's not my role. And if you have very traditional roles in that sense, fair play. But there will be a point where you're going to have to manage the finances of the household.
Absolutely.
So what does that look like?
Something happens to him.
Yeah, or something happens to him.
So
precisely.
He needs to be flexible enough to be able to be someone that you can build a life with.
Yeah.
Because you're two separate people at the end.
There's certain conversations that you just have to have. And it's either going to be a case of you have them before you're married, or you get married and then you're going to have them. And that's when it becomes a bit more difficult. Precisely. Then you've got to figure it out. So basically, the sooner the better. I would also say work backwards. And what I mean by that is, when I say build the life you want, what is your end goal just in life, period? And then think about what are the steps that take you towards that said life and what that looks like.
Really good point. And I feel like I'm always using me as an example, guys, because I've now reached the ripe old age of 30. I'm thinking about my 20s. I would never think like that. Like, that would never come into my mind. Like, what life do I want? I was literally just walking. I don't know. Is it just me? Like, how did you feel?
I think most people are like that.
You're just coasting, aren't
you?
Your 20s, I guess, are for figuring things out, ultimately speaking, and basically building the sort of precursor of the, like, next chapter of your life. But in essence, I think people really take milestones really, really seriously. So like, by 30, I should have X, Y, Z, and my life should look like this.
Exactly.
And it becomes a really negative spiral for a lot of people who may not necessarily have achieved all of those things at that said point.
It's quite rigid.
Yeah, precisely. But I would say, once again, there are certain things that you have within your control that you can actually use to help you build the life you want as well. Like, for example, I know, and this is colloquially speaking, in my personal life, I've got loads of friends that aren't married, for example, and really want to get married, but they just haven't met the right person yet, and that's just not happened for them, or for whatever reason, etc. In that particular line, there's only so much you can do. You make the art and sort of like, you know, you tie your camp, etc. With something like finances, that is very much well within your control to be able to educate yourself and help to build that life you want. And I would also say, the more educated you become about certain specific topics like finance, it helps to inform you to make better holistic decisions as well. Because ultimately speaking, finance just infiltrates your whole life in every which way forward.
It's the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
Between any talking stage, it's the finance conversation.
Just quickly though, what are we going to advise our lovely girl? How are we going to end it off for her?
So she's blocked him essentially, and I'm glad she's blocked him.
I love that for sis.
Yeah, like I'm glad she's used her judgment. She's executed.
I just don't think anyone should wait for anyone.
If somebody hasn't given you that timeline that you need or you want, I would say, and I would also genuinely say that, and I didn't actually think it was as true as it is until I got married. If he wanted to, he would.
100%.
There would always be a way.
100%. And also, she's ready, he's not, so You're in different, like...
And you clearly have the ability to walk away as well, which is a great thing.
Exactly.
You've to use that level of, like, clinical, pragmatic... Yeah. Like action.
Like she's realised she's in a level where she's ready to get married, he's not. So, you know, you can't wait for someone to be ready.
Or it's a case where, you know, you part
and
if it's meant to be, it might be a love story. It may be. And they may be writing
the notebook.
It could be the case where you know,
I just generally don't think. I just really don't think
you don't want him stringing you along.
Yeah, like
precisely.
There's no point.
And once again, how old is she? She's quite young. She said she was like 23.
She didn't say.
She didn't. Am I thinking about
she
another
doesn't
one?
See, I don't think no, she doesn't. I don't know. I don't think she seems that young.
Maybe you're right. If she sounds like she's on job.
Yeah. She goes, your girl's been trying.
Yeah.
So to me, that says she wants to get married.
I think she's seasoned. Yeah.
In this dating.
It's very hall. Very Bridgerton-esque.
Yeah. She's in bloom.
Oh my god! When she was in bloom, it was so great.
She's in bloom.
I loved her.
Oh my god! Yeah.
Say less. What's that?
Irrespective of how old she is, I think if she wants to go down the road of I want to be married, this man is not ready, I think do both of yourselves a favor and just call it a day for now at least. And if it's meant to be, it will. And if it's not, then khalas.
Yeah.
Keep it moving.
Indeed. Okay.
I like that.
Anissa, just quickly, what do you want to tell the girlies? Where can they find you on the socials? Tell us quickly a little snippet of your courses.
So you can find me on Instagram and on Twitter. Twitter's a little bit more reckless, not going to lie, but it is what it is, at Anissa Finance. You can find me on www.anissazaman.com.
Ooh!
I know.
Official.
I love that.
Very much so. And I provide many a courses. So I've got 3 signature courses, Finesse Your Finance, which is a bootcamp 101, if you are literally a novice.
I'm going to do that.
I've got Invest in Yourself, which is a 4-week and an 8-week crash course or an intensive, depending on what you want to learn about finance. But it really takes you through everything you need to know about Islamic finance, how to invest, what platforms to use, what graphs look like, how to interpret them, etc., etc., and how that can inform your judgment on making investments for yourself. Mm. And then my final course at this moment in time is called Love Costs.
I love that.
Which is about marriage and finance. And that has an element of not only about the sort of finance, but the psychology and also sort of the fiqh of marriage as well. So it's a culmination of everything to give you a holistic understanding.
I
usually have like a therapist on and I have an imam on as well to provide that level
so
of knowledge.
Educational. Can you come back on the podcast?
Yeah, Anissa, you've got to come
back when you're back in London.
I feel like this is probably one of the most important episodes we've ever done.
I feel like all the stuff I wanted to talk about I didn't even get to.
Oh my god.
I wish it was a longer episode.
Off the record, babes.
You know, we're approaching 2 hours.
Oh my gosh, really?
No, I'm joking. One hour and 45.
Okay.
Right, ladies.
That's very 11 months or just over of you.
Do you like people to round up? Are you a round upper?
Am I a round upper in terms of what? Like,
just, you know, generally, does that irk you when someone says like 98?
Oh, you know what? As an economist in a previous life, I really like precision. But yeah, I mean, it depends. I think it's a scenario situation, right? Mm. But yeah, I don't know. I don't mind a rounding up situation either. How about you guys?
No,
you don't really care. Yeah, I mean, this isn't really
so, like,
my day to day thinking.
If I'm sending money to someone and they're like to me precisely, give me £12.49.
I legit thought we were talking about time. Yeah. Okay, so quickly on this. Yeah. So just a quick
199.
So interestingly, I learned this actually at uni from one of my friends and really knowledgeable. She was a friend, she's from Saudi, and she was saying to me, when let's say I owed you £4.89 and I gave you a fiver, that remainder money, right, would essentially be a debt.
God, I've been giving people debts.
So giving my money back now.
Pay my money back.
My 12 pence.
Yes. But obviously it comes ultimately comes with intention and such and all the rest of it. But when I learned that, I was like, I'm going to have to Now I'm going to have to be that weird friend that's, like giving 12, you, that's sending you £25.97
Yeah, that's weird. I don't think I can do it.
Yeah.
But I'll just be like, I forgive the debt.
There you go. Loophole, guys. Forgive the debt. Call it a day.
Literally. Anyway, guys.
Thank you so much, Anissa, for your time today for this really important episode. I definitely learned a lot and I will be checking out your courses, and I hope the lovely ladies that are listening too
will go and check you out. Guys, go support Anissa. We need her. Especially that love course. Those of you getting married, you and your partner should be doing that. Just saying. Anyway, we're going to round off the episode. Thank you guys so much. We love and appreciate you guys. Thank you for all the comments, all the YouTube comments, all the reviews on Apple Podcasts. And we're going to try and figure out how to do a question box with Galado.
Guys, the producer is in the room today.
Hey, Galado. Yeah, on the podcast. She used to have her own episode. She's too sick and too well connected. But yeah, we just want to say we appreciate you, girl. Thank you so much. And to you guys at home, we love you guys so much. And make sure you support the podcast always. Have a good night.
Bye.
Bye.
God, it sounds sexy.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.